Ajam to Brahmana Kalpa.
Ajam to Brahmana Kalpa.
Udavitaha.
Sahagata Adharasha.
Vidhi sadhana moyatra. Saga prakrita vaikritaha.
Annihilation
and annihilation.
But
Brahmanaha of Brahma,
Kalpa,
his one day,
Savikalpa,
along with the duration of the universes, Udaritaha,
exemplified,
Vidhi, regulative principles,
Sadharanaho.
In summary,
Yatra,
wherein,
Sarga,
creation,
Prakritaha,
in the matter of material nature,
Vaikritaha,
disbursement. Translation. The process of creation and annihilation described in summary herein is the regulative principle during the duration of Brahma's one day. It is also the regulative principles in the creation of the Mahat, in which the material nature is dispersed. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. There are three different types of creation called Mahakalpa, Vikalpa and Kalpa. In the Mahakalpa, the Lord assumes the first Purusha incarnation as Karanadakshai Vishnu, with all the potency of the Mahatattva and the 16 principles of creative matter and instruments. The creative instruments are 11, the ingredients are 5, and all of them are the products of Mahat, or materialistic ego. These creations by the Lord in his feature as Karanadakshai Vishnu are called the Mahakalpa. The creation of Brahma and the dispersion of the material ingredients are called Vikalpa, and the creation by Brahma in each day of his life is called Kalpa. Therefore, each day of Brahma is called a Kalpa, and therefore there are 30 Kalpas in a term of Brahma's day. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita as follows. Sahasra Yuga Partantam Ahar Yad Brahmano Vidhu Ratim Yuga Sahasratam Te Ho Rata Vido Janaha. In the upper planetary systems, the duration of one complete day and night is equal to one complete year of this earth. This is accepted even by the modern scientist and attested by the astronauts. Similarly, in the region of still higher planetary systems, the duration of day and night is still greater than the heavenly planets. The four yugas are calculated in terms of the heavenly calendars and according to the 12,000 years in a term of the heavenly planets. This is called the Dvija Yuga, and 1,000 Dvija Yugas make up one day of Lord Brahma. The creation during the day of Brahma is called Kalpa, and the creation of Brahma is called Vikalpa. When Vikalpas are made possible by the breathing of Mahavishnu, this is called a Mahakalpa. There are regular and systematic cycles of these Mahakalpas and Vikalpas and Kalpas. In answer to Maharaj Parikshit's questions about them, Sukadeva Goswami answered in the Prabhashakanda of the Shakanda Purana, they are as followed. Partaham Sveta Kalpas Cha Dviti Yo Nilalohita Vama Devas Tritastu Tat Gatam Taro Para Ro Rava Panchama Poktam Stasta Parma Iti Smitaha Saptamota Brita Kalpa Kandarpo Stama Uchete Sadyuta Navama Kalpa Ishano Dashama Smitaha Dayan Ekasa Proktas Tat Sahasrato Praha Trayodasa Udastu Garuda Tad Chaturdasya, Kolam Panchadosa Jaya, Purushamasi, Purnamasi Prajapati, Sodasha Narasimha Tu, Samahis Tu Tatopara, Agneyo Vishnaya Surha, Soma Kalpa Tato Padaha. Dvavimsa Bhavama Prokta, Supama Iti Chappaha, Vaishkuntas Charistas Tadvat, Valikalpas Tato Puna. Sapta Vimso Tata Viraja, Gori Kalpa Tata Padaha. Maitasvari tata proktas tripuro yatra gatita. Pitri kalpas tata kante yat yakuhar brahmana smritha. Therefore the 30 kalpas of Brahma are 1. Sweta kalpa, 2. Nilahita, 3. Vamanadev, 4. Gatantara, 5. Rorava, 6. Prana, 7. Vritakalpa, 8. Karnadarpa, 9. Sadyodha, 10. Ishana, 11. Dhyana, 12. Sarasvata, 13. Udana, 14. Garuda, 15. Korma, 16. Nrsimha, 17. Samadhi, 18. Agniye, 19. Vishnuja, 20. Sora, 21. Samakalpa, 22. Bhavana, 23. Supuma, 24. Vaikunta, 25. Architsa, 26. Valikalpa, 27. Varija, 28. Gorakalpa, 29. Maheshwara, 30. Pratikalpa. There are Brahma, these are Brahma's days only, and he lives months and years up to 100. And so we can just imagine how many creations there are in a kalpa only. Then again, there are vikalpas, which are generated by the breathing of Mahavishnu, as stated in the Brahma Samhita. Yashyaika nisvasita kala matavalamvya jivanta loma vilija jagadanda kanta. Jagadanda Mata. The Brahmanas live only the duration of the breathing period of Mahavishnu. The Brahmanas live only the duration of the breathing period of Mahavishnu. So the exhaling and inhaling of Vishnu are the Mahakalpas, and all these are due to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for no one else is the master of all creation. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Does anybody miss that? Shall I read it again? God, no. Hare Krishna. Bhakta in Sanskrit. Okay. So this is amazing. This is really the amazing knowledge of Krishna consciousness. Ajantu brahmana kalpa svavi kalpa utharitaha vidhi sadhana yatra sargam prakriti vaikritaha. The process of creation and annihilation described in summary herein is the regulative principle during the duration of Brahma's one day. It is the regulative principle in the creation of Mahat in which the material nature is dispersed. So the Bhagavatam, the Srimad Bhagavatam, is so scientific, so incredibly intense, so much knowledge is there in the Bhagavatam. It's complete knowledge. The Vedas describe the higher and the lower planetary systems to the nth degree. So fine. Prabhupada in this purport states that even in the upper planetary, this is quoting Srila Prabhupada, in the upper planetary systems, during the duration of one complete day and night is equal to one complete year of this earth. This is accepted by the modern scientists and attested by astronauts. So even the astronauts know that when they go into outer space, there is a time difference. So this is now validated by astronauts for their limited understanding, because actually the astronauts can't even get out of the Earth's atmosphere in actuality. So the world can see that there are different time frames. Even we can see, if you go to the North Pole or the South Pole, there's 6 months of the year as darkness and 6 months of the year as light. So it's completely different again. So in the heavenly planets, we understand that one Earth year is equal to one day in the heavenly planets. So this is an amazing thing. So if you have the desire to live in the heavenly planets, your one day is equal to a year here. So you live for 100 years, so that's a long, long time in the heavenly planets, if that's where you want to go. But as Prabhupada is saying here, the higher you go on the different planetary systems, the longer the period of time is. And so one can go right up to the highest planet, which is Satyaloka, with Lord Brahma. So there are seven higher planetary systems, and there are seven lower planetary systems. So I wanted to just explain a little bit about these different lokas, about these different planets, the science that's behind the Bhagavatam, the science that is behind this Vedic culture. We're situated on this Earth planet on the sixth higher planet. So we're right in the middle. We're captured right in the middle. And this Earth planet is called Bhurloka. So Bhurloka. Now that's where we live now as human beings, within the Jambudvip, one of the seven spheres. So it's known as Karma. Karma Bhumi. So this is a place where karma is created, and a kind of a cosmic crossroads. You can either go up or you can go down, depending on your karma, depending on your actions, depending on your desires. So here we decide our future situation. Here we decide whether we want to go higher or lower. And by acting in a particular way, that'll direct us to the higher planets or it'll direct us to the lower planets. You know, there's that Indian saying, yata mat tata pat. It's not the case. Not all paths lead to the same place. Actually, some lead downwards and some lead upwards. So we are here on this Bhurloka. And quoting from the Srimad Bhagavatam, the fifth canto, King Rahugana said, this birth as a human being is the best of all. So to be placed in this Bhurloka, in this earthly planet, is the best of all. Even birth amongst the demigods and the heavenly planets is not as glorious as the birth of a human being on this earth. You may think, you've got to be kidding. The heavenly planets are far greater, you know. But no, actually, this earth planet is much better. What is the use of the exalted position of the demigods, he asks? In the heavenly planets, due to profuse material comforts, there is no possibility of associating with devotees. So you're so wrapped up in the comfort and luxury of the heavenly planets that it's very difficult to actually make progress. But here we have happiness and distress, sukha-dukha, you know. Material happiness and distress, and we get a lot of misery in this material world. So it's easy for us to say, I want something better. I want out. I want to get out of here. So between Bhuvaloka and Bhurloka, so the next platform up is Bhuvaloka, but in between that space is called Antariksha. And this is an interplanetary space where the sun is situated. Here lives the living entities called Rakshasas, Yakshas, and Ghosts. So in between that is that period. And they often descend on Earth and are generally inimical to humans. Usually they will be born later as human beings. So Rakshasas actually can be born as human beings. And a quote from the Srimad Bhagavatam again, 3.6.29, about ghosts, about lower living entities. Living entities who are associated with Rudra develop the third mode of material nature or ignorance, and they are situated in the sky between the earth planet and the heavenly planets. So that's the region of the ghosts. So that's why when it's recommended that at sunset, when the sun is going down, that is the time when these entities are most active. So some people say ghosts are fictitious, there's no such thing, you know, no, it's all mythology, it's all... No, actually, the Shastras tell us that there are these lower living entities. And actually, sometimes we're often told that before you go to bed at that time, it's not good to talk about ghosts or hobgoblins or rakshasas, because actually they... this person is interested, and then they come and they influence you in your dreams and in your activities. So who lives in the upper planetary system? So these are the greater upper planetary systems. So as I mentioned, we've got Bhurvaloka. And this level is for the semi-demigods. They're not quite a demigod. They're a semi-demigod. And these are the Karanas, the Vidyaharas, the Kinaras. In other words, in Western terminology, angels. Right? So this is the realm of the angels. Now, if you're one of these lesser demigods, you're assisting other demigods. So, you know, you have like nature spirits. Like, say, for example, we've heard... Has anybody here heard of Findhorn? Or these different... Yeah, you've heard of Findhorn? It's a place where they grow amazing vegetables, and back in the 70s, and it was always working with the lower ethereal entities that look after vegetables and so on and so forth. So these lower, you know, like you have little elves, fairies, hobgoblins, dwarfs, like that kind of thing. They actually exist. They're on another level, another plane. And these are these people called semi-demigods from Bhuvaloka. And they help the demigods in creation. They help fruit to grow and plants to grow and so on and so forth. So if I'm a semi-demigod, I can become a demigod if I subdue my enjoying spirit. So they have a propensity to be whimsical and naughty and so on and so forth. And so if they can control that, they can actually make their way up to be a demigod. But that most of the times these lower living entities are born as a human being. The next level is Svaragaloka or Devaloka, and this is the abode of the demigods. So this is the realm. This is the enjoying capital. This is like the Las Vegas of the spiritual world. You know, I'm here to enjoy, you know. So, or the Gold Coast. So the heavenly planets. Now say, for example, if I'm Indra, the king, the demigod, there are other demigods in the cosmic hierarchy. Agni is the lowest of the demigods. And who is the highest demigod? Can anybody tell me? Vishnu. Vishnu actually resides there as well. So other gods occupy positions that are between those. You know, you've got Indra, he's the king of heaven. My duty, if I was born there, is the affairs of the universe. So these are the big time. You know, you're looking after planetary systems and so on and so forth. You're looking after the rain. You're looking after the water. It's a big departmental management position. So you protect the inhabitants against asuras, against demons. And you're empowered. You are an empowered servant of God. If I advance in my devotional service, so thereby if I render devotional service to the Lord, I'll be born as a sage in Muniloka. Muniloka. So I can actually make advancement from the heavenly planets. If I dedicate myself to the service of the Lord, then I can go to Muniloka, which is branches up. But that's incredibly hard to do because there's just so much sense gratification. You live for an incredibly long time. You can have anything you want. There's no karma there, so you just enjoy. Just enjoy. Greatest food, luxury, everything is there. So, but still, if a person has that understanding that they can advance, they do service to the Lord, and they'll be born in Muniloka. If they become too attached to material enjoyment, guess what happens? They come back to this earth planet. And a lot of demigods actually vie for a position to come back to this earth planet because this is the greatest opportunity to springboard to the spiritual realm. More so than even in the heavenly planets as it was described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So a lot of you here that are sitting here were demigods in your past lives. Lucky you can't remember, isn't it? But anyway, and so Prabhupada used to say our children are actually demigods. They are coming through us to again take up this Krishna consciousness, to take an opportunity to become Krishna conscious. Sometimes, it was interesting, sometimes we wonder about that. You know, because our kids do so much nonsense and, you know, and they go out and become involved in Maya. And I asked Burjan one time about my children, you know, because they're out there and they're partying and all that kind of stuff. And I said, I'm so disappointed. I mean, we did everything and these children came through us and they're supposed to be demigods. He said, yeah, they have an enjoying propensity. They want to enjoy. They can't stop enjoying. But after a period of time, they'll come to their realization. So you have to let them go, and then eventually they'll understand, oh, I've got to do something with this human form of life to get out of this material cycle of birth and death. So they become a human being. The next loka that we're talking about now is Mahaloka, which is the abode of the saints and sages. Now this is similar. There's three different lokas now. There's Mahaloka, Janaloka, and Tapaloka. They're all for the mystics, for the munis, for the great sages that sit and meditate and practice different siddhis and so on and so forth. And all of them are called Muni Loka. So those three are grouped together and they're all Muni Lokas. And so this is a really amazing. These sages constantly meditate on the Lord. Like say, for example, Tapaloka, that's where the Kumaras were. They performed great tapasya. So these sages constantly meditate on the Lord. And if you imagine yourself to be there as one of the great sages, by my meditation, I can either go higher or I can go lower. If you go up to Satyaloka, which is the abode of Lord Brahma and the pinnacle, the highest planetary system, and become one of Lord Brahma's associates, then you'll be able to then go with Lord Brahma at the end of the yuga and at the end of his cycle and go to the spiritual world. Or you go back down again to the demigods. So it's like a question of up, down, up, down, up, down, whatever you desire. So in Satyaloka, Satyaloka is the abode of Lord Brahma. If you can imagine, this is the first body. My first body is the body of Lord Brahma, the secondary creator of the Lord. Now all of us have been a Lord Brahma at one stage. And we went down the scale, we went down the ladder. So I lived in, say for example, if I was Lord Brahma, I live in Satyaloka, the topmost dimensional level in this world. If I'm a pure devotee, of the Lord, at the end of my long life, I'll return to Haridan, go back to the spiritual world, together with my associates, the great sages. Otherwise, I will be born as a great sage in Muni Loka, and then progressively go pop, 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 down. So there are 14 planetary systems and they're named as follows. So we've got the seven higher planetaries and seven lower planetaries. So number one, Lord Brahma, Satyaloka. Tapaloka, Gyanaloka, Mahaloka, Svarloka, Bhuvaloka, Burloka. That's us folks, Burloka. Then we go down to the hellish planets. Okay, we've got Atalaloka, Vitalaloka, Sutalaloka, Talatalaloka, Mahatalaloka, Rasatalaloka, and Patalaloka. You don't want to know about those places. That's not very pleasant at all. But, you know, we may have experienced all those different lokas, all those different planets. So the time factor increases, as Prabhupada is mentioning here in this purport, the time factor increases as one goes to the higher planetary systems. And I just wanted to elaborate a little bit on that. I just researched a little bit. It's absolutely fascinating when you study the Vedas, how intricate the whole philosophy and the whole science is, you know. There's so many different interesting and scientific understandings of the material world that are there from the Vedic culture. So it was interesting when you mention it. You know, like so often when I do my interfaith work and my dealing with other different religious traditions, especially traditions that I grew up with because I was born in a Christian family, so many times people ask, you know, and I come in and I say, I'm a Vaishnava Hindu, I'm a devotee of Krishna, a Hare Krishna devotee. So many times people ask, why the hell did you change your religion? You know, why did you change your religion? Why did you change the Vedic culture? But, you know, because they perceive the culture, the Vedic, the scientific culture of India as very primitive. They see it as a real step down. But the truth is that Vedic culture and knowledge is far more advanced than any Western knowledge. And this knowledge, this Vedic knowledge, is not just for Indians, but it's for all humanity. It's for everybody to understand. So, this Vedic culture, as far as time is concerned, okay, we're talking about colour, time. So in Vedic culture, colour, gyan, chronology, just the sequence of time, does not depend on any mundane event like the birth of a person. So in the West we have 2014 AD. So they equate the time factor to the birth of Jesus Christ. They lead it up to that. So in the Vedic culture they don't depend on any mundane event like the birth of a person, the coronation of a king, or a military success for their time chronology. But it depends on the movement of the various heavenly bodies in the cosmos. So it's how the cosmos moves, or in other words, on astrological science. But during the British rule, the foreign rulers thought that the entire concept of chronology, Vedic chronology, is merely mythological fiction. They couldn't understand it at all without having any scientific basis. They just completely dismissed it. Whereas in fact, those foreign, and as a matter of fact, these foreign invaders, these rulers, framed the education system in India and the subcontinent with their sinister Western view, with their limited and sinister Western view, turning people away from their own heritage and culture to make them respectful to the Western culture. And so the point that's made is, unfortunately, the part of this episode is that practically nothing has been done to counter this view within the Indian diaspora for the last 50 years. People in India generally, and different branches of the Indian culture, still think that Western culture is better than the Indian scientific culture, Vedic culture. So that the result is that most people of this country, India, do not even know how rich their ancestor culture is. And on the contrary, they have developed a mentality to slight this Vedic culture. In other words, they scoff it off as mythology and put it down whenever it's mentioned. And they're lazy to learn the truth, which is there within the Vedic culture. A burning example of this trend is we blindly followed the unscientific chronology that we don't even know what the Vedic chronology is. So we blindly go, okay, yes, it's 2014 and so on and so forth. For example, this is a really interesting example that I found out. If you delete the letters R and the trailing tra from the word ahotraha, one is left with the word hora, H-O-R-A. And from this hora, another system of measuring time. The hora system, introduced in this country by the celebrated Vedic astronomer Vraha Miharira. Has anybody heard of him? Yeah? Vraha Miharira. By dividing the day and night into 24 parts. Many believe that this hora system was adopted by the entire world with the present system that we have, and the practice of dividing the night and day into 24 hours. And moreover, the Sanskrit word hora is actually the word hour, hora hour. Many believe that the Latin, they say it came from the Latin hora, because an hour in Latin is also hora, but it's actually also Sanskrit. And in Greek it's ora, have been derived. And it's interesting to note that one can derive the names of the 7 days of the week also from this hora system. So it's again the Vedic culture that's instituted, number one, the 24 hours in the day, and also the 7 days of the week. It all comes from Vedic culture. So the 7 days of the week that we use, the names of it, every Indian will be pleased to know that it's also a gift from the Vedic culture for the entire world. The Vedic astronomers dedicated each day to a planet as its lord and derived the name of that day as per the lord of that day. So the first day of the week is called Sunday. Why do you think it's called Sunday? Who's the lord of the sun? Surya. And in the Vedic text, the name for Sunday is Surya. Huh? Yeah. And then the next one is Monday, which is Soma. So it's very interesting Vedic facts, you know, but Westerners don't know, and a lot of Indians don't know either. So there's some more interesting Vedic facts. I hope you don't mind, but this was so intriguing that I just followed through. The Satya Yuga is called Krita Yuga. The first age is 1,728,000 human years. So this is Satya Yuga, also known as the Golden Age or the Age of Truth. What are some of the qualities of the golden age? This is the age where virtue reigns. And it is a perfect living environment for human beings. Now, we understand that with the advent of Lord Chaitanya, there is a small Satyayuga is going to be developed over the next 10,000 years. So it's going to be an age of supreme virtue. Now, another statistic of that Satyayuga, a human stature is 21 cubits. A human is 21 cubits tall. Anybody know what a cubit is? It's a form of measurement, which is... Anybody know? No? It's 1.6... Or one foot, 6 inches, 1.5 feet. Or 45.72 centimetres. Okay? So the residents of the Satyayuga were 21 cubits. Anybody quickly work out how tall they were? 31 foot, 6 inches. That's how tall they were in the Satyayuga. The lifespan is a lakh of years. They lived for, what's a lakh? How many? 100,000. They lived for 100,000 years. And death occurred when they willed it. So death occurred when they willed it. It was only when they wanted to die they could. So this is the Satyayuga. In the Treta Yuga, which is the second age, it's 1,296,000 human years. It's also known as the Silver Age. So Satyayuga is a golden age. The Treta Yuga is the Silver Age. The qualities of this age are that, like in the Satyayuga, you were 100% pure. In the Treta Yuga, the 0.75% of the living entity is virtuous, and 0.25% is sinful. So there's a part of you that's a little bit sinful, but 0.75% of you is pretty good. The human stature there is 14 cubits, so we're going down in size, okay? And the lifespan is 10,000 years in Treta Yuga. Then we've got Dwarapa Yuga, the third age, and this is 864,000 human years, also known as the Bronze Age. And the qualities of this age is that, again, a person has one half virtuous and one half sinful. So you're a bit tittering on both sides. You've got a bit of both in there. And the lifespan in the Dwarapa Yuga is, how many, anybody know? 1,000 years. Yes, that's right, 1,000 years. Boy, we've got some Vedic scholars here. Then the Kali Yuga, here we go, folks, this is us. The Kali Yuga, the fourth stage, the last age, is 432 human years. It's also known as the Iron Age, the Iron Age. In this age in which we're presently living, the qualities of the ages are that our nature is 1/4 virtue, we've got a little bit of virtue, and 3/4 sinful. My God, we're struggling here. And the human stature, I actually break this record, the human stature is 3.5 cubits. 3.5 cubits. So the average is three. I must have a little bit of a throwback to Dwarpa Yuga, because 3.5 cubits is something like 5 foot 4. Who's about 5 foot 4? 5 foot 4, 5 foot 6? Okay, so Sukadev, generally speaking, that's the height. Somehow or other, they gave me extra soma or something, and I shot up a little bit more. So anyway. And the lifespan is 100 years or 120 years. So this is amazing. Now we're talking, Prabhupada is mentioning here... Yes, Prabhu?
What was the Dwarapa Yuga?
Huh? Dwarapa Yuga, did they mention that? No, it didn't mention it. So you can anticipate somewhere between... 14 cubits... and 3.5 cubits, so round about that halfway mark. It's said that Lord Krishna was incredibly tall, you know. So, and Arjuna was also 9 foot tall, round about 9 foot tall. Is that correct? If you go to, anybody been to Rajasthan? There's a museum there of some of the Kshatriya warriors and some of the swords, my God, that they used to carry. It's like from here to the steps. Is one sword. That's what they used to carry. Some of the armour is also there still from those Kshatriya warriors. They were huge. Big boys. So anyway, now Prabhupada was talking about a kalpa. A kalpa is a single daytime period of the lifetime of Lord Brahma, the creator God. Two kalpas are there, day and night. Each kalpa is composed of 1,000 maha kalpas, maha yugas, one cycle of the above four yugas is one Mahayuga. So a cycle of Satyayuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, Kali Yuga, that is one Mahayuga. So each kalpa, a day of Lord Brahma, is 1,000 Mahayugas. So can you imagine? A kalpa is thus equal to 4.32 billion years. 4.32 billion years. Brahma's year. A year of Lord Brahma is composed of 336 days, nights, the cycle of Lord Brahma, or 720 kalpas, which translates to 8.6 billion human years. That's a year of Lord Brahma. My God. Then Brahma's life. The lifespan of Lord Brahma is 100 years. So then he has 72,000 kalpas, which translates to 311.4 trillion human years. That's a long lifetime. At the end of the life of Lord Brahma, all the worlds are completely dissolved in the Mahapurusha, and then the and in that, another cycle that overlaps the others is the Manvatars. Each kalpa is reigned over by a succession of 14 Manus, and the reign of each Manu is called Manvatara. A single Manvatara is approximately 71 Mahayugas. Each Manvatara is followed by a deluge which destroys the existing continents and swallows up all the living entities except the few who are preserved for repopulating the earth. So a couple of people are saved and they can repopulate the earth. So our position, what's our position? We're located in the 51st Brahma year of the life of our Brahma. Okay, so he is 55, he's a middle-aged person now. He's 55 years of life, of Lord Brahma. Within the Brahma year, we are the first. We are in the first Brahma day. So this is his day. And called the Vraha Kalpa. And within the Brahma day, we are the seventh month Manvatara. And in the 28th Mahayuga of that Manvatara. This would place us at about the 454th Mahayuga of the 1,000 Mahayugas that comprise of one day of Lord Brahma. This is amazing. Within the Mahayugas, we are in the Kali Yuga, the 5,100th year of Kali Yuga, which corresponds to the year 2000. So when it was the year 2000, the end of the millennium, it was the 5,100th year of Kali Yuga. Okay, so that means that we are fairly early in the Kali Yuga. It's still got a long way to go. And this age will continue for another 412,000 more years. But in that, there is a 10,000-year bubble of what's called the Satyayuga. And this is the start of it. This Hare Krishna movement is the start of that 10,000-year bubble. So another interesting thing. This is another... When you start researching this, it's all these interesting little facts start coming out, which I thought was interesting anyway. Number 108. You know how we say in Vedic culture, 108 is such an auspicious number? Why is it that we've got 108 beads? Why is there 108? It's a special number. Can anybody tell me? Upanishads. Huh? Upanishads? 108 Upanishads? What else? 108 special gopis, yeah. Anything else? Yeah, I found out a few other facts. Here are some further examples. The distance from the sun to the earth is 108 times the diameter of the sun. The distance from the moon to the earth is 108 times the diameter of the moon. The distance from the sun to the earth is 10,800 yojanas. Now these are interesting as far as the Satyayugas that we were talking about, right? These are arithmetical equations. The Satyayuga lasts for, as we mentioned, 1,728,000 years, which is exactly 16 times 108. The Treta Yuga, we said, was 1,296 years, which is exactly 12 times 108. The Dwapara Yuga is 864 years, which is 8 times 108. And the Kali Yuga is 432 years, which is 4 times 108. So all these things work out. So this Vedic culture is so much more advanced than our so-called scientific age. So much more advanced. They've got so much more technology and understanding. And to compare actually what the sciences are offering up as real knowledge is like comparing what a little kid in kindergarten learns compared to quantum physics. The two are just not compatible. This is just such amazing knowledge that's there. Yet in India today, the population have been blinded to think that Vedic knowledge is just mythology. And this is a fact. It's just taught that it's mythology. In India today, the population is like a child of a wealthy parent. A child of a wealthy parent. You've got a very rich family, and the stupid kid goes out and begs in the street. He's unaware of the wealth that the family has got. He goes out and begs in the street. He's forgotten that their wealth and his inheritance, and this is the case with humanity at the moment. We have forgotten this great knowledge, especially the Indian population have forgotten their heritage. And that's why Prabhupada was encouraging people to study again the Vedas, and especially the Indian people to come to the West and teach everybody true scientific knowledge. So as devotees, we need to remind not only the Indians, but the whole world of our real inheritance, the real knowledge that's there, the wealth of knowledge that's there in the Vedic culture. This is our duty as devotees. We can see in today's society that it's nothing but the blind leading the blind. Anybody at any stage have a look at anything that's happening in politics? Do you ever listen to anything as far as Parliament is concerned? It is a joke. So many times if you go to these parliamentary sessions, it is like child's play. They argue about minor things. I was just reading in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam about Prithu Maharaj and how incredible that personality was as a leader, as a guiding light. It was just amazing. And how compassionate he was. His whole soul existence as a king was to render compassion to his citizens. How much compassion does the governments of today have? Very, very little. So at Jamastami, we're going to get quite a few politicians coming here. Right? So we want to give them as much prasadam and as much Vedic knowledge as we can give to them, that they have a little bit of an inkling. Wow, these people hold something very sacred, very, very special. As a matter of fact, we've got... I just received a letter back from Ted Baillieu. Remember last year at Jamastami, Ted Baillieu, who was the former Premier of Victoria, very powerful man within politics, very wealthy man. I extended an invitation again for him to come, and he accepted carte blanche. Oh, yes, I will come. I met him the other day at a function, and he said, "Hey, Buck." He calls me Buck. He remembered one part of my name anyway. He said, "Hey, Buck, how are you?" And I said, "Well, good, Ted." And I invited him again to come to the temple. Yesterday I received his return invitation. He would love to come again. That's how much of a good time. Remember when he was here and he gave that speech upstairs? He had a whole prepared speech, right? And he just went and talked from the heart. What did he see? He saw the hearts of the devotees. He saw the pleasure that the devotees were getting from Krishna consciousness, from this Vedic knowledge. And that inspired him. He couldn't believe it, so much so that he's coming again. He's bringing his colleagues as well. And luckily this year, we've got two Janmashtamis, in a sense, because they're celebrating Janmashtami in India on the Sunday, and then we've got it on the Monday. So the temple is making arrangements that this year we're looking after those people that are coming on the Sunday as well. So on the Sunday, we got the members of the opposition coming. And on the Monday, we got the politicians from the governing party coming. Some other people that are coming is the Consul General of India, wonderful lady, very, very pure lady. She knows Vedic culture, and she's the Consul General here in Victoria, Mrs. Jane, and she's going to be coming. She's been looking forward to coming to the temple. So we have to influence these people with spiritual knowledge. We give them books, we give them prasadam, but more importantly, we give them friendship. Because Vedic culture is all about friendship and association. So anyway, this is a wonderful thing. So this knowledge, this Vedic knowledge, is not mythology. It's not fairy tales. It's not just another Lord of the Rings thing, you know, with hobbits and all that. This is a phantasmagoria. This is something that Hollywood make up. But this is reality. The spiritual world as present, the material and spiritual worlds as presented through the Shastra is reality. So we must take advantage of this great wealth. We personally have to take advantage of this great wealth. So Prabhupada was always very emphatic that we study his books, that we really make a study, to learn these things, you know, about the different kalpas and yugas and so on and so forth. And Prabhupada said, before you go out and present this literature to other people, you should know it pretty well yourself. So he wrote the books not just to distribute them, but also for us to learn from them. It was interesting, I was reading just recently, I listened to something that Bhakti Charu Maharaj gave a lecture, and he was saying, you know, in the old days, the devotees hardly had any time to learn the scriptures because they were so involved with getting out there and making money and to build the temples, to set up ISKCON in the start. So we hardly had any time to really... But Prabhupada wanted us to study. He said, one of the things we used to do when we sold the books, if someone out on the street, if you were selling the books, would ask, oh, what's that book about? And the standard answer would be, this is for you to figure out. Because the devotee had no idea what was it contained in the book. That's for you to figure out, you know. So that was the mantra that was used. So anyway, we don't just sell the books, we have to study the books. And we have to regularly put time aside to actually study these books. And just as an aside, you know, why are we placing so much emphasis on this big temple in Mayapur? Because it's explaining this whole Vedic culture, this whole cosmology, this whole chronology. You know, like even in the temple of the Vedic planetarium, they're building this chandelier which depicts all the heavenly planets and the lower planets and how it all moves in synchrony with one another. And Prabhupada was emphatic that we have this set up, that the Westerners, millions of people are going to come to this huge, beautiful temple, that they actually see, wow, this is how it all works. At the moment, we've got flat earth consciousness. Western technology gives us a limited understanding of how the universe works. When they actually see the universe in this chandelier that they're building and how it all works, then they say, what have the scientists been telling us? And then the truth starts to come out about Vedic culture, and people will accept other aspects then of Vedic culture. That you're not this material body, that you're a spirit soul, that karma exists, that you have many lifetimes, that you have to chant this Maha Mantra, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, to deliver yourself from this material situation. So our efforts are on an individual level that we have to preach very strongly. Oh God, I've gone over time. That we have to preach. Where's Jai? Jayanta's not here. Great. So we have to preach very, very fervently. He usually does the wind-up, you know, but he's late. He was in the shower, so he's not here. So we have to preach very fervently, and every one of us has to do that. Now, one of the things that I really want to point out is this competition that's been on the notice board. You know, the $10,000 Bhagavad Gita competition? I got a call from the girl that was the devotee, Mataji, that's organising it, and she said, we have so many different entries already. You know how many devotees, ISKCON devotees, have entered? Out of all the many people that are going for this competition, 10,000? Two. Two ISKCON devotees. Please, and I'm doing something, everybody, please distribute these. And if you can do it yourself, please take part in this competition. Can I get you to distribute? Everybody should have one, take it. If you know a person in university, just split it up and give some to the ladies as well, Prabhu. Yeah, now she said that. It's only eligible for people that are doing a university course. But she said, there's not a strict and hard and fast rule. You can take up through, what's that university online? Open University. You can take up a free course on something, anything, right? And you become a university student. So anybody can do that. She said, no, we're quite able to do that. So you just have to sign up with Open University. Put yourself down to a free course. It doesn't cost anything. All of a sudden, you're a uni student. You know, if you ever wanted to be a uni student, that's the way to do it, you know. So then you can partake in this incredible opportunity. $10,000. Can you imagine what you can do with $10,000 in service? So We have to develop this. And we shouldn't be ashamed of our Vedic culture. An interesting thing was the other day, and this is just personal things, I had an opportunity to go to a celebration of the election of the new Prime Minister of India, Narendra Modi. And this was an event which was the overseas friends overseas of the BJP. And so some of the friends know me, and they said, Bhakta, we'd like you to come. So I went. It was at the it was at the Hilton Hotel. It was $100 a ticket, but they paid for my ticket. And I went there, and Ted was there. Hey, Buck! You know, he was there, and there were other ones. And anyway, it was quite interesting because most of the people there were embarrassed about their heritage. They were so proud of being here in Australia. They all wear their fancy suits. They all wear, you know, really Armani clothing and stylish haircuts and all that kind of stuff. But when you actually see Narendra Modi, he wears Vedic clothing. He wears simple clothing. He was a sadhu when he was younger. He's a strict vegetarian. He gets up at 4 o'clock in the morning and meditates every day. He does his yoga. So this man and all of these followers were all dressed in their latest fashion suits and everything and drinking whiskey and all this kind of stuff. Completely devoid of Vedic culture. And it was myself and two ladies from the Brahma Kumaris that were dressed in Vedic clothing. And they, you know, like, it was because Modi wears Vedic clothing. And so they were all very impressed, you know. Oh, you follow Vedic culture. It's so funny, you know, because some people have this thing about wearing Western clothes and wearing Indian clothes. One time, I think I've mentioned this one time before, I went to a celebration of Mahatma Gandhi. It was a celebration. Do you remember I mentioned that? It was a celebration of Mahatma Gandhi, and they said, Bhakti, you've got to come. So I just went as a devotee. I had a wrap around. I just walked into the place. And one person came up to me and said, gee, it's really nice that you went all out. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, you know, you've got Mahatma Gandhi's costume on. You're dressing like... I said, not quite. How ridiculous, you know. So devotees must dispel this myth that Vedic culture has nothing to do with real knowledge, you know. That this understanding that West is best and India is the worst. How many come to this country, how many people from India come to this country to make some wealth, to make some big money, you know, to the US? Refugees, I deal with the refugees, they have this idea of this utopia, the heavenly planets or something, you know. So don't believe this brainwashing, you know. Be a proud follower of Vedic culture, be proud of your heritage, whether you're Indian or whether you're Western and you've adopted it. You don't belong here. We either came from the heavenly planets or whatever. We're here to present Krishna consciousness. And by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada is giving this Vedic knowledge in a decipherable form that we can easily understand. It's so easy to understand through Srila Prabhupada. If anybody tried before coming to Krishna consciousness to understand Vedic culture, it would be just too much. You couldn't understand it. So we have to... We have to encourage people and encourage people to go to the very, very top, to go back home, back to Godhead. This is our duty. And when we get this knowledge, our duty to pass this on. So just a couple of quick points. Today is Guru Purnima. It's not something that we place a lot of emphasis on, but it's the worship of the Guru, whether Diksha or Shiksha Guru. Today is a good day to think of our spiritual master and our teachers and honour them in some way. We don't place that much emphasis because we have Vyasa Pujas and Prabhupada's appearance day and so on and so forth. But for the general Hindu community, it's Guru Purnima today. So we show gratitude to the spiritual master. One of our great gurus in our heritage, Sanatana Goswami, it's his disappearance day today. And today is also the start of Chaturmasya, to perform a little bit of austerity. So no spinach pies. So that's the end of the spinach pies. That's a real disaster for Bhaktadas. Loves his spinach pies. Anyway, Prabhu, that's it. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. Guru Purnima ki. Vyantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Gaura Premanandi.